verse 14 as the basis of our meditation tonight. Paul says in this verse, "For by one offering he hath perfected forever them that are sanctified." Now this letter that he wrote to the Hebrews touches upon many subjects, many themes. But if we were to sum up the main theme of the book of Hebrews, it is this: there is no substitute for the gospel. There is no substitute for the gospel. Paul was writing this letter at a time when many believers from a Jewish background were turning away from the faith. And he addresses that, for instance, there in verse number 25, "not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is." And so some were going back to Judaism. Some were departing from the faith of the gospel. They were going back. And so Paul writes this letter in order to show them the folly of that action, to show them that there is no substitute for the gospel. Jesus Christ, who is the sum and substance of the gospel, is the fullness of the revelation of God and the fullness of the provision that God has made for us. And so he begins in the letter by showing that Christ is superior to angels. Then he shows that Christ is superior to Moses. He shows that Christ is superior to the Levitical priesthood. He shows that Christ is superior to all the animal sacrifices that were offered under the ceremonial law. He is, in essence, showing the people that there is no substitute for the gospel. Once you turn away from the gospel, once you turn away from Christ, there is no hope. There is no hope. Because our hope is found only in Jesus Christ. And so he's seeking to show here, seeking to explain and to expound and to emphasize to those who had remained true to Christ why we remain true to Christ. And so he says in verse 14, if we could lift this text out, we could really use it as the reason. This is the great argument, Paul's argument, the apostle's argument, why there's no substitute for the gospel. And here it is: "For," or "because, by one offering," namely the offering of Christ, the sacrifice of Christ, "he hath perfected forever them that are sanctified." And there you have the reason. There you have the reason. There's the reason why it's folly to forsake this gospel, to replace it with something else. In their case, to go back to Judaism. It's folly. Because it is only by the sacrifice of Christ that we are perfected. And we are perfected forever. Now, if you look at this statement in verse 14, there's really three parts to it. There's the objects of it: them that are sacrificed, are sanctified, them that are sanctified. And then you have the great blessing that Christ bestows. He hath perfected forever. He hath perfected them that are sanctified. And then you have the reason, or the cause, the ground for that blessing, namely his offering, his sacrifice. Them that are sanctified. Who is he talking about? Them that are sanctified. Who is he talking about in this text? Sometimes the word sanctified has to do with being purified from sin. And that is true. It is the work of the Spirit to sanctify the believer. But that's only a part of this word. The word sanctified has a much broader meaning, a much broader application. It literally means to be set apart, to be consecrated, set apart unto God. If you come up the passage there to verse 10, by the which will we are sanctified through the offering of the body of Jesus Christ once and for all. And the thought there is that by the sacrifice of Christ, there is a people who are set apart to God. They belong to Him. They are purchased because of this sacrifice. They become His possession. They are sanctified. They are set apart. And so the objects of this great statement in verse 14 are those whom Christ has purchased with His own blood. And He has set them apart as His purchased possession. But then notice the blessing that they have. Notice the blessing that belongs to them. Paul says, He hath perfected forever them that are sanctified. Look at that. Perfected. Perfected. Sometimes the world makes the charge against Christians. You think that you're perfect. You think that you're perfect. In the sense that the world uses that, it's not true by way of our practical experience, because we know that in ourselves we are not perfect. But there's also a sense in which we are perfect. It's the sense that is recorded here in this chapter, in this verse. He hath perfected forever those whom He has purchased with His blood and set apart unto Himself. Perfected forever. Now that raises the question, what does Paul mean by the use of this word perfect, or perfection, or to perfect? What does he mean? Well, it's a word that he uses a number of times throughout this letter. If you turn back to chapter 7, you'll find that this thread runs through and it begins to unfold to us exactly what Paul means. What is this perfection that he's referring to? Chapter 7, verse 19. He says, therefore the law made nothing perfect, but the bringing in of a better hope did. And the better hope is the gospel, which the law prefigured. The better hope is Christ and His finished work upon the cross, His work of atonement, His work of redemption. And then he explains what he means by this perfection. By the which we draw nigh unto God. You'll notice here that this perfection that he is referring to has an intimate connection with us as believers having both the right and the power to draw near to God. That's what this perfection is. He has perfected them that are sanctified. And this perfection that we have on account of Christ's death brings us, it gives us the right and it gives us the power to draw nigh to God. That's what perfection is. It is being brought back to God. It is being right with God. It is being reconciled to God. It's being in relationship with God, drawing nigh to God. That's what this perfection is. And always remember that we will never be perfect, we will never be complete if we are separated from God. It is only whenever we are in union with Him that we will achieve that perfection. The world is looking for fulfillment, it's looking for completeness, and it can never find it. It will never find it apart from God, apart from its creator. This perfection that Paul is referring to is the right and the power to draw near to God. Look at chapter 9 and verse number 9. He's talking about the tabernacle that was given to Moses in the wilderness. And he says in verse 9 that it was a figure, it was an illustration for the time then present, for that present time, the time in which Moses lived, in which were offered both gifts and sacrifices that could not make him that did the service perfect as pertaining to the conscience. So this perfection now also has a bearing upon the conscience. It has to do with having a perfect state of conscience. Come down to verse 13. He says, "For if the blood of bulls and of goats and the ashes of an heifer sprinkling the unclean sanctifieth to the purifying of the flesh, how much more shall the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without spot to God, purge your conscience from dead works to serve the living God." What is perfection? It's being reconciled to God, being right with God, being in union with him. What is perfection? It is having a perfect state of conscience. A conscience that is purged from dead works. If you come over to chapter 10 and verse 1, the same thought, only from bringing in a different aspect this time. He says, "For the law, having a shadow of good things to come, and not the very image of the things, can never, with those sacrifices which they offered year by year continually, make the comers thereon to perfect." There's the same thought. The ceremonial law cannot make us perfect. Those religious rituals cannot make us perfect. But Christ gives us this perfection. What is it? It's reconciling us to God, giving us the right and power to draw nigh to him, giving to us this perfect state of conscience. Verse 2, "For then would they not have ceased to be offered, because that the worshippers, once purged, should have had no more conscience of sins." That's what this perfection is. No more conscience of sins. Cleansed in spirit from the weakening fear, from the shrinking shame, which the conscience experiences as a result of when guilt is contracted. No more conscience of sins. To have a clear conscience before God. Verse 22 of chapter 10. "Let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience." Conscience that accuses us of guilt. A conscience that is awakened to our sin. You know why the world is so troubled? You know why the world is so restless? It is trying to run away from its guilty conscience. Do you know what makes hell the place that it is? It's the conscience. The Lord said, "It is that place where the worm dieth not, and the fire is not quenched." And that little phrase there, the place where the worm dieth not, the thought is the gnawing of the conscience for all eternity. The conscience awakened. There'll be no seared, no matter how hot the fire of hell is, it will never sear the conscience. The conscience awakened. And the sinner will live with his conscience for all eternity. That conscience continually confronting him of the guilt of his sin. But the perfection that Jesus Christ gives to his people is this perfect state of conscience, cleansed, purged from the conscience of sins, having no more conscience of sins, cleansed from the conscience of dead works, and therefore having this right and this power to draw near to God. This is the blessing that he gives to us. This is why he's saying to these Hebrews that had forsaken the gospel that this was folly. There is no substitute for the gospel. Those religious rituals and sacrifices that were offered every day and every year can never take away sin, can never cleanse the conscience, can never bring us nigh to God in themselves. It's only Christ. It's only him. And how is this blessing obtained? It is obtained by his offering once and for all. For by one offering, by one sacrifice, the offering up of himself unto God without spot, he hath perfected forever them that are sanctified. And that little phrase there, one offering, indicates its exclusiveness. It's the only sacrifice of its kind. It is the only way of salvation. It is the only way of redemption. No other hope, no other remedy, no other way but by the sacrifice of Christ. And therefore, how much we ought to esteem and value the finished work of Christ. This great sacrifice that he has offered, he makes us, he's not only purchased us, setting us apart unto God, but he makes us perfect. He makes us perfect. And he brings us nigh to God. He cleanses the conscience. He gives the conscience peace. This is perfection. And it's found only in the gospel. It's the only remedy for this world. It's the only remedy for this world. The world tries to invent its own remedy, and it's invented the whole area of psychology. Psychology is really just a substitute for the gospel. It's a substitute for the gospel. People are troubled in their minds. People are anxious. And it all stems from the fact that their conscience accuses them of their guilt, confronts them with their guilt. And the only remedy for that, it's not a bottle of tablets. You can't take something that is physical, can't take a physical substance in order to cure something that belongs to the realm of the mind. That is the area of the gospel. That is the area of gospel truth. And it is only whenever men and women come to realize and to recognize what Christ has accomplished at the cross, only then does the conscience find its cleansing and find its deliverance. This is the perfection that we have in Christ. Why would we substitute the gospel with anything else? There is no substitute for the gospel. By one offering, He hath sanctified forever. He hath perfected forever them that are sanctified. What a glorious text of Scripture this is, and it's one that we ought to ponder and one that we ought to rejoice in. Let's turn to the Gospel Hymn Supplement, and we'll sing number 44.